And welcome everybody to Dicing with Design podcast. I'm Grant, and who else do we have here?
That's Colin. Colin Gray.
And Joe Prince.
That's yay, me. Yay for us.
Yay.
Every time we go on, which is... How often are we going to do this, guys?
Oh, I don't think we should commit to a schedule.
We don't
roughly,
really.
Roughly monthly. Roughly monthly. We'll try every week, which will turn into monthly.
Yeah.
And try to have a focused conversation about games design. So I think we'll start off with what we've been up to in gaming, just as a quick catch-up. Cole, would you like to start us off?
Cool. Well, I have been up to, I've been plenty of gaming the last couple of weeks, hasn't there? Well, even more than a couple of weeks. For anybody that's listening to this sort of in the future or whatever, it's just been Christmas. We're just back from New Year break and all that kind of stuff. I've got plenty of gaming in over the Christmas. What we've been playing... I think the first one was the first new game certainly was Battlestar Galactica. Grant and I and Dylan had a game of that up in Inverness. Mm-hmm. First ever time playing it. In fact, we had a few games, didn't we? Because we played with you as well, Joe. Actually, didn't we?
Yeah.
At the Shed of Dread.
Yeah, it was a good game. My introduction to Battlestar Galactica, the game, and I didn't see the new TV series, so it was all new to me.
Yes. Yeah, I'd seen the first series, but that was it. So there was a few spoilers in there for me. Apparently I wasn't supposed to know some of the things that was in the game, but hey. But, yeah. Was there many spoilers, Grant, you know?
I think there are a couple of things that get revealed in the first few episodes. Some of the cards made me think, that's a bit of a spoiler there. That person shouldn't be alive. That person... You shouldn't know that's a Cylon, but not really. I mean, it puts across the theme well, but I'm sure we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
In a later episode, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Sure, I think it's worth a whole episode talking about that game, yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
It's got all this kind of, it's the kind of unique bits of it, like the secrecy, because there's somebody in the game as a Cylon, so it's just...
And
it's
they might not even know it yet.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's just so different from a lot of other games I've played, so yeah, it's good that way. Other than that, we've had a big game of Advanced Hero Quest, which we're going to talk about a bit more later on, so I'll leave that for the moment. Grant and I had a visit to Static Games in Glasgow and spent a wee bit too much money over there. Bought mm-hmm. a game called Master Builder, which is a really cool little game, actually. It's quite simple, quite easy, but...
cheap, I believe.
Yeah, totally. Well, it was down from 50 to 20, wasn't it, in the sale. And I bought it because this is my eternal quest to find a game that I can convince Kate to like and have some gaming with a girlfriend. And she actually, no, I haven't convinced her to play it yet, so I don't know whether that's worked yet. But yeah, it's really cool. It's basically the principle is that you're a builder in the Middle Ages and you want to become the master builder of all times. So you have to kind of win building contracts and sort of survive events which just kind of mess things up, hire workers who are either negligent or angry, hot-headed, that kind of thing, and ruin your building plans. And eventually you build this, the kind of unique bit of it is that you build this 3D village in the middle of the table. So you buy these little pieces that make up buildings, little building blocks, and then build them up so that it's actually a 3D building in the middle of the table. So it's quite cool. But yeah, I'm sure that'll fit into a few of our topics in the coming weeks. So,
can you use them for Warhammer? What scale of the buildings can you use them for Warhammer?
That's exactly my question. It doesn't work on 28mm scale.
Well, the... probably not. The buildings, like the tower and stuff like that, are way too small. But do you know what? It comes with 8 city walls, and they could definitely be used.
Oh, right. Cool.
So, because they wouldn't be city wall sized, but they'd definitely be dry stone dike sized to a dwarf.
So, you just have to play with the words.
Some of it we could use. And I think that's for me for the last few weeks.
Okay, do you not do some playtesting of a card game?
The oh, what do you mean Scrabble?
I thought you did got some dungeon dueling in, didn't you?
Oh no, we never actually played that in the end.
Oh, did you? Was it Magic you played?
Yeah, we just played some Magic and stuff. I did do well. I'll talk about that. I mean, I did play some dungeon dueling. I did have a quick game with Russ testing some of the mechanics. But,
okay. Was that your gaming call?
Pretty much, yeah. I think we played a funny game. Was it what was that one called again, Joe? The
Adventure
Island or something like that.
The Forbidden Island, yeah.
Forbidden Island.
Yeah, we had a game of that.
That was very very simple, very quick, but kind of fun. It was
what game is that called?
It was like you lay down tiles on the table, and the principle is that the water's rising, so you've got to try and go and pick up these relics, and it's a cooperative game, so you're working with each other to go around and try and not let the island sink first of all, and then collect the relics second of all, and then escape the island before it sinks. So we played it on the novice level, which basically meant it was really easy. So I think it might be worth a go again though, with
starting
at a higher level.
It's cooperative. It's by the same guy who did Pandemic.
Okay.
It's like a very famous, well-known cooperative game. And apparently
it's on Wheaton Tabletop just now, or a few weeks ago.
And apparently it's got some similar ideas, some similar mechanics to Pandemic. So I got that and gave it a go. That was the first time I'd played, was playing with Cole, and then linking into the quest for a game to play with the missus. I actually got Marie to have play a game of Forbidden Island with me as well. We had a couple of that.
Nice.
And we started at the slightly higher difficulty level, not the novice, at the beginner level or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit more tricky, but we did still manage quite comfortably to beat the game and steal all four artifacts and escape.
It comes a lovely tin, it looks like. That's all I know about
it. It does come in a very nice tin.
Yeah. What else then, Joe? I think we're on to your games now, Joe.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much the same as everyone else. The big Advanced Tier Request campaign, I've been playing that with Matt and Russ and your good selves when you came over to the Shedded Dread to join in. Other than that, I played a little bit of poker when Marie's sister and her boyfriend were over a couple of weeks ago. It's the first time I've met Christina, and played a few hands of Texas Hold'em, which this is always good fun.
I've not played in ages.
Is it? Sorry, I've got issues with games that don't tell stories.
But they win money. That's more important.
Yeah. That's it, and I do like the Texas Hold'em mechanic, and that's something that I've kind of tried to work into some of my own games and games design, that kind of thing. Like, you know, you don't have to have the best hand or have rolled the best to still succeed or still win. That's what I kind of like about it, and it's quick. You're always in there.
Do you mean the bluffing, or the communal cards?
Well, you're playing your opponent rather than playing their hand.
Yeah, the bluffing. Primarily, although the communal cards do help, but they're kind of hard to factor in. Although, one of my games in development, which is the working title of Pumpkin Bomb, which I'll probably change to Super Vendetta or something,
right.
does use like a Texas Hold'em based mechanic where you have communal cards and you have, based on your superheroes level or your supervillains threat level, you have your hand cards. So it uses the Texas Hold'em style of rounds.
Okay.
Yeah, well, but you can bring in your, but it does tell a story, of course. So yeah.
Yeah.
That's one in development. Yeah. So maybe we'll get a quick game of that next weekend.
Yeah, we've got a big weekend or
five. Yeah.
Big day.
Yeah. Big night.
Yeah.
So, I think that's about it for gaming. For me, I've done a lot of kind of talking about gaming and planning. Things talking about maybe starting a Warband level Warhammer game, stuff like that, but nothing else has come of it as yet. So, but the Advanced Hero Quest is the big one.
Yeah,
major game I've been doing recently.
Okay, I think it's all been completely covered because I've been doing a game with you guys. I've been looking at some models. I've been painting a lot. Just tonight, I'm almost finished. A few more Warhammer models for basically I've got a sorcerer almost done, and I've got the crew for my Hellcannon almost finished up. So be seeing it on a tabletop, losing a battle quite soon. Apart from that, yeah, same as you guys. I've been looking at the internet just this afternoon. The leaks come out from Games Workshop on from the new White Dwarf for the new Warriors of Chaos book and all the new lovely looking plastic crack that's coming out with it.
Oh, right. When's the Warriors of Chaos book rumoured for then? Is it not rumoured?
It's not rumoured. The page that somebody's photographed says that it's... I've retweeted it just this evening. It's released February 2nd, so it'll be up for pre-release, I guess, next week, and then for actually out February 2nd.
Funky. Oh, well, I look forward to that one. I wish I hadn't bothered buying the Dark Angels book now. I could have saved my...
You do need to save your money for this stuff.
You need to save money. Yeah.
Actually, it's mostly plastic, so it doesn't look... It's not awful, except for the £30 book. But hey, that's not what we're about. We're all about positivity here.
Yes.
Dicing with design.
Yeah, well, all I'll do is buy the book, and then maybe buy Throg if he comes out.
That'll oh, yeah, there's a Throg. Yep. The Troll King.
Probably Troll Army. Good to go. Pure trolls.
Yes, you start off a Warriors of Chaos Army with your existing orc. Existing orc models for you. Yeah. Okay, so are we ready to move on to our big topic then?
All good.
Yeah. Good stuff. Okay, so our main topic today is, as we've already alluded to, our games of Advanced Hero Quest.
Hero Quest, deep inside another dimension, face battling barbarians and evil magic on a quest for adventure in a maze of monsters. This is Hero Quest, the fantasy adventure game where winning means mastering the arts of combat.
I'll use my broadsword.
And magic.
Fire of Wrath.
Once you get into it, you'll never be the same. Hero Quest. Now with two new adventure packs, the legend grows.
is that the official advert, Joe?
Broadsword! Fire of Wrath!
I'll use my broadsword! at this point, we should just insert the audio from the
classic 80s advert for the first edition of MB/Games Workshop Hero Quest.
Yeah, I think we should probably take it from there. Yes, Hero Quest is... it was a game designed as a joint design or a joint release by Games Workshop and Milton Bradley Games, and it was kind of made as a gateway game to get kids into miniature gaming, I suppose.
I guess that would be Games Workshop's perspective. I think Milton Bradley probably just... It was just a game to try and make some money off the fantasy genre, wasn't it?
Yeah, I guess so.
But it was a hugely important game, certainly for me and our generation. I think it's like, it was like our D&D. It was like our Red Box Dungeons and Dragons.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, and it was on TV. You saw adverts on TV for...
That orc scared the hell out of me.
Brilliant. But for a fantasy board game. Yeah,
I didn't realise it was on TV.
It was basically like fighting fantasy in a board game.
Yeah.
How I found it playing. Yeah, and so you would go around a dungeon, you would have to roll two dice, see how many squares you moved, you'd open up doors, you'd search for treasure, you'd find traps and wandering monsters, you would be able to find treasure and spend it in between missions on
better weapons
yeah. And potions that all came on cards. Played on a big board, basically a fixed board, but where there would be dead ends and doors could move around, so you'd be playing a different map every time. And I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, it was great fun as a kid. It had all the kind of classic elements. There's four hero classes that you choose, whether you're going to be the barbarian, the wizard, or the elf, or the dwarf.
We just rolled it up though, didn't we? I'll just say now, I'd never played HeroQuest before at all until 2 weeks ago, so I don't have too much to add to the history of all this. But I thought it was awesome. I thought it was great fun.
Yeah. Well, we're not even that's not even the game we played called, because after that, Games Workshop released themselves Advanced HeroQuest, which is closer to what we actually played. Yeah. See, we only managed to corrupt you in geekish ways when you got to uni.
Yeah, that's true. Although, to be fair, if I'd met you before then, I would have been equally corruptible.
Yeah, no, you're the cool kid, surely.
No. But we were saying about the character there. We just rolled up our classes, didn't we? I just totally randomly picked my character and... in terms of class and race and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yep. That was closer to what you get in Advanced HeroQuest. And Advanced HeroQuest did a little bit of what it said on the tin. It moved it to a D12 system. I don't know exactly why, just to be different, I think, from Warhammer. It made a little bit more like Warhammer Fantasy Battle. You had similar stats, your weapon skill, your ballistic skill, and all that sort of stuff. Used more Warhammer models. And, yeah, just it used tiles, almost like Space Hulk-type tiles. Some missions you could design, pre-design. Other ones were randomly generated. You were exploring this dungeon, and randomly you would find different types of rooms and corridor sections. You never knew what was around the corner. The longer you spent searching for treasure, the more likely something was to creep up behind you.
Yeah, that was quite a lot that it expanded on from the basic HeroQuest, which, like we've mentioned, just had the four fixed character classes, and there was no generating stats or anything. That was who they were. If you were a barbarian, you always had a mind of 2 and a body of 8, whatever it was.
Oh yeah.
And that was it. But in the advanced version, yeah, there was rules for playing different races, the three classic races, human, elf, and dwarf. No halflings, noticeably. So, I don't know why. Maybe Games Workshop were just anti-hobbits.
Yeah. Why would anyone choose anything but a dwarf, obviously? I mean, surely everybody was dwarves.
Dude, you don't even choose dwarves now.
Well, that was only because of the dice. If I'd had free choice, I would have been a dwarf.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. I mean, when you play Fantasy Battle.
Well, that's true, actually, yeah.
They look cool, but they don't move.
Yeah. Come on, the new book. Come on, the new book.
Yeah, keep hoping for that.
Yeah, good luck with that. Warriors of Chaos has been bumped up the list, yeah.
What? They just came out like a month ago or something. Oh, jeez.
Anything more about the basic Advanced HeroQuest game? Came in a box, massive Skavens. Box, with Skavens, yeah.
Yes.
About 24 identical Skaven models, which is what you got from Games Workshop back in the day. Of course, all the lovely pictures inside the book were of the Skaven models you could build, which you could buy and build for yourself, which is exactly what you did, Joe, wasn't it?
Yep, that's exactly what I did.
They got you.
300, 400 Skaven models. But that was how, because that was my gateway. It was the gateway into Warhammer and the Warhammer world, more than the basic HeroQuest was. They gave you all that and a bit of background of the world. And yeah, like you say, in the box you just had the basic monopose Skaven models with you put different colour bases on to show that they were different types.
Yeah.
But then it had all the lovely Jez Goodwin sculpts of like the 80s Skaven that you could buy up with all their different weird weapons of poison wind globes and warp fire throwers and Jezail teams and things, and then the Night Runners and Gutter Runners and things like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just as a kid, I would just like gradually try and collect all the Skaven just for Advanced HeroQuest. And then it got to the point where I had enough Skaven that I could almost put together a Warhammer army.
Almost, but you had to buy more models.
Almost, but I had to buy more models. I had to proxy some. But I remember going to the Games Workshop in York when I must have been about, I don't know, 14 or 15 or something. Probably younger than that, probably 13, like, for my birthday. And I had like all my Skaven together, and that was just enough to make like a 1,000-point army. and the guy was running it from the, it would be then the third edition book, like just mm-hmm. telling me all these magic items to take and stuff, and playing out a little game, and it was great.
Yeah, and there's a similar model with a game called Space Crusade.
Space Crusade takes you into warp space to fight the force of chaos, deep in a parallel universe where nightmares are real. Space Crusade, the ultimate adventure game, where you must use all your skill and weaponry.
Plasma gun, dreadnought!
To battle through infested starships and win the highest rank. The ultimate encounter is here. Space Crusade, now with a new adventure pack.
Again, Games Workshop slash Milton Bradley, and then they did Advanced Space Crusade, which wasn't nearly as good by themselves.
No, that was it. They followed the same approach for that, and the basic Space Crusade was great. I used to love that as a kid. That was good, and there was an Amiga game of it as well.
I played that one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the advanced version that they did of Space Crusade, they kind of dropped the ball on it. It didn't have the same hooks into the universe. I didn't think. It didn't work quite as well.
Plus, we already had Space Hulk.
Yeah, exactly. It was competing with Space Hulk, which, it was a bit daft.
So what was the difference between them two, then?
Between what, Advanced Space Crusade and Space Hulk?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, basically, in Space Hulk, you were playing the best of the best Marines who died really easily.
Mm-hmm.
And in Advanced Space Crusade, you were playing the worst of the worst Marines who were quite hard.
Right, okay.
Marine Scouts versus Tyranid Warriors. And there are rules for all these other different types of things, but you got in the book, in the box, you got about 6 Tyranid Warriors and 10 or 15 Scouts.
Yeah.
Really?
So, yeah, and Advanced Space Crusade really suffered from there wasn't really enough models in the box to play it properly. But you really needed to get a few more. A lot more.
Oh, really?
Especially from the monster's point of view, there's only 6 monster models.
Yeah.
And of 2 different kinds.
So was it not like, it wasn't like Space Hulk and that you got missions and stuff? Was it more, HeroQuest style?
It was still mission-based. Yeah, it was randomly generated as you went through this Tyranid ship. So it was like a living ship that you were going through.
Do you not have to like pass through teleport sphincters or something to get out or something like that?
There was something like that, yeah. There was sphincters definitely mentioned sphincter airlocks.
That sounds dodgy.
Anyway, back to Advanced HeroQuest. I think I jumped the gun a little bit earlier on when I was talking about some of the mechanics that you got. So, Joe, can you tell us a bit about how Advanced HeroQuest works in general?
How
do the mechanics work?
How do the mechanics work? What about a comparison with other Dungeon Bash games, or are you going to get to that later?
Let's do the comparison. I think a lot of the mechanics will come out in that.
Yeah, I mean, you've touched on the mechanics before. Because what I'm thinking at the moment, what I've been playing at the moment, which I didn't mention actually in the recap, is also Wrath of Ashardalon, the Dungeons & Dragons board game Dungeon Bash thing, which has a lot in common with Advanced HeroQuest. It's the same kind of deal, same kind of setup. You're adventurers going down a dungeon to kill some monsters, make money, and do great things for fame and fortune.
I find the whole premise of it being like an honest Dungeons and Dragons. It's like, really, this is what it's designed for anyway. Why pretend anything different? It's about dungeon bashing. It's about creating your party of adventurers and going and killing stuff and taking their things from them.
Yeah. Although, are you referring to Wrath of Ashardalon or Advanced HeroQuest with that?
I'm referring to, well, the premise of Wrath of Ashardalon is that. And that's what Dungeons & Dragons is. Tell us what Wrath of Ashardalon plays like.
Yeah.
Because I think you're not as fond as you'd hope to be of it.
No, I mean, it's a great box and quite expensive. And to be fair, it is what it says on the tin. Like every other Dungeons & Dragons game I've played, it does contain Dungeons and a Dragon. There's only, yeah, only one dragon, I suppose, not Dragon. Dungeons and Dragon. And it's similar to, I don't see your question, that you both have random dungeon generation. You have a stack of tiles in the D&D adventure system that as you explore the edge of the board, you just put a random tile down and then that's the next section. But it's very samey. Like every tile you put down will always have a monster on it. And if you don't put a tile down, then you'll always draw an encounter card. And if you do put a tile down, you probably will draw an encounter card. And the encounter
card. So it's not like the suspense you might get with Advanced Hero Quest. If you spend a while searching for stuff, then your GM, which is another thing that Advanced Hero Quest has, but the Charlemagne doesn't. Your GM rolls a dice, and rolls a 12, and he gets to he gets to pick up a token.
Yeah,
which lets him do something awful to you later on. So as you're, it feels like when you're creeping about the dungeon and there's two modes of play, I think, in Advanced Hero Quest. One is when you're just searching around.
Yeah, there are literally, like, in the mechanics, there's the exploration turns, and then when you meet a monster, it goes to combat turns, and things work slightly differently. But it is a question of pacing. Like, you do have that pacing where it starts kind of slow in Advanced Hero Quest, and you might not meet any monsters for a while. You might go into a load of empty rooms and stuff. Whereas Shardlon, it's like, from the outset, there's a monster, there's an encounter, there's a monster, there's an encounter. And the encounters are just randomly drawn from a deck.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to have any sort of sense of a story happening, because it's just like, oh, some kobold snipers have appeared.
Yeah.
Now there's a lava flow.
Yeah.
And now a boulder's fallen on me.
I've gone through
a phantasmal rift. And you're like, we've only moved 3 foot.
Yeah. It reminds me of the cover of a Terry Pratchett novel. You're chased by 7,000 bizarre weirdos.
Yeah.
All carrying something weird, and you're poisoned probably as well.
Yeah. That's it. And it does have a little bit of a Benny Hill aspect to it. Sometimes it's best to just start running and just run when there's some monsters revealed. You're like, well, let's just keep running and keep revealing the tiles and we'll get to the end.
Yeah, that doesn't sound great.
it has that. So I was a bit disappointed with it, especially because I'd read lots of good things online. It got amazing reviews. People like going, oh, this is amazing. This is fantastic.
Yeah, but, no, D6G, I think, really liked it. But then they only ever review things they like. I think they maybe aren't as fussy as some of us who have less time to play, or who find ourselves less time to play games.
So would it be good for adapting, Joe, into the kind of game we're playing with Advanced Hero Quest, though? So, like, rather than randomly generating stuff, bring out this certain monster at that time, this certain trap at that time, to do a storyline game, like, were the rules quite good?
Well, there was aspects of the rules that I liked, and so I mean, it's all laid out really well, and it's like everything's on cards. So you've got your character card that tells you what you can do and tells you how many powers you've got, and then you've got your power cards. Which give you your attacks and stuff. There's not like to make an attack lookup page, or whatever. It just says on your card what your plus is and how much damage you do if you hit.
Yeah.
Something I love about cards is your rulebook can be very, very small, because it's all on the cards and you're picking out. Like, I keep on going on about this, I know, but it's something that I really see as the future of games, or maybe just the present of games.
Yeah, and interestingly, that was one of the main kind of differences between Advanced Hero Quest and Warhammer Quest, which was the latest version. And by latest, it was still, 1998 when it came out?
I think it's just come out on iOS last year as well.
Really?
Yeah, it's out on iPad, yeah.
Yeah, because Warhammer Quest did that exactly. It had cards instead of tables, which is more handy, but... You know, it's not really a major innovation when you break it. It's like it's either on a table or on a card. It's better to have it.
Yeah.
It was when Games Workshop were going through their card phase of like putting everything on cards. Like, you had Warhammer Battle Magic, where everything was on cards and all your magic items were on cards.
Oh, yeah.
And, Dark Millennium 40K with all your psychic powers on cards and all your equipment on cards.
Hmm.
It's handier to look up than tables, but it didn't have that kind of old school feel. In the same way, So.
I liked the spell caster deck for Warhammer, being able to just set them out in front of you and then actually turn them over when you've used them and stuff like that. It's just quite useful.
Yeah, well, they're back to that Games Workshop a little bit with Fantasy Battle and with 40K as well. They've brought out cards.
Oh yeah, they bring out the cards, but I mean they're purely optional now. Whereas in the late 90s, it was integral to the game. You needed that deck of cards.
Really?
If you lost one of them, then you couldn't. Use that magic deck really anymore because it didn't represent all the spells available.
Right.
So Wrath of the Shard Lawn thumbs roughly in the downwards direction.
I'd say so. It's very pick up and play. It's good that everything's in the box. You can pick up and play, and like you'll have a look. I mean, the last game that I played with the Russ, a two-player game, and that was more enjoyable than some of the other games. And you don't need a GM, so
yeah,
it's very simple. But it's a bit too random and too basic. There's no storytelling at all. You don't really, your characters are all pre-generated. It's almost back to like barbarian, elf, dwarf, back to the kind of Hero Quest level of simplicity of your characters.
Yeah.
Who did you play it with again, Joe? Who did you say?
I played it with Russ.
Right. Yeah.
Last week.
Yeah. Hmm. Played it with me as well. I just what I didn't like was the randomness of them, what the types of monsters. I know the previous one was Ravenloft, which was all undead stuff.
Yeah.
And they come out with this, and it's an orc, a shambling mouther, a dragon, also some kobolds in there.
It's very random. It's very random. And the game I played with Russ, when we finally got our way to the villain's lair, and we were just like, oh, it's random who your villain is. And we're like, oh, it's an orc shaman, and his henchman, two snakes. We're like, oh, great, they're the weakest kept monsters in the deck. We'll totally kick this guy out.
Right, so yeah, any other Dungeon Bash games fall under that category?
Probably worth saying a bit more about Warhammer Quest, because that was the follow-up to Advanced Hero Quest, and that is Wrath of the Shardlawn's a lot closer to Warhammer Quest. Like, Warhammer Quest didn't have a GM either. It just had monsters just appeared and would always act in a certain way, like moving towards you and hitting you in the face usually. Which is, can work quite well, but I think the flexibility of having a GM really helps the game and really helps Advanced Hero Quest. Maybe been a bit almost spoilt with it, especially with like when you got someone like Matt who'll just invent a load of things and riff off the system, change bits, and come up with a world attached to it where there is like a story and you do kind of care about your characters and actually get more of the role-playing element into it rather than it just being a straight-up board game.
Yeah.
I think at the other end of things, I've got... Oh, what was the Mantic board game called that I own? Dwarf King's Hold. I got Dwarf King's Hold, the orky one, Orcs versus Elves. But that's more of a strategy game where you're kind of an equal playing field, although it is a versus mode. You've got one player plays Orcs, one player plays Elves, and you have a mission that you're both trying to fulfill your mission objectives. And it reminded me a lot of Space Hulk in that, you know what the rules are going into it. There's nothing hidden. You've got objectives there. Mm-hmm. But it's an order-based system. You draw tokens, which tells you how many orders you can give to share out amongst your models.
Posse, yeah. They're quite like that, don't they, Mantic? They've gone with that. I've got Project Aurora, which is very... which is the sci-fi version, and that is the orders. The orders are what makes it, what gives you the strategy, because that determines how many models you can activate that turn, doesn't it?
Uh-huh, yeah. But it's, I don't know, it's something makes me uncomfortable like that. It's just not as simulationist as, like, I can see it's a strategy game, but you maybe have one elf just sitting in a corner somewhere because he's
not getting orders. Yeah,
he's not getting orders. Like, I'm just going to stand here. Why?
He's meditating to the elves.
I actually quite like that. I thought, I know you're saying it's not as simulationist because it's not, it's not the way it would work in real life, but it did make it more strategic because you would choose to do certain things. Yeah. And yeah, you can get, well, I could suspend belief long enough, I think, to, I don't know, I really liked King's Hold, actually, Dwarf's King's Hold. It was just, it was good fun. It was quite deep. You could do a lot with it.
Yeah, it was just that introductory mission we played, but I really like to clip out some more models and actually get playing further on in it.
Yeah, definitely. See, that's always my issue with Space Hulk, because it's, I feel like there's only so many times, so many ways you can play a lot of the missions, because basically you've got four guys at the start, he can go forward six, he can go forward six, he can go forward six, whatever it is. And until you get to a turn, then you've got a couple of options, but still there's not that many variations.
Well, especially GCR player, but
remember
there's the sort of the semi-order system where you do draw command points in Space Hulk.
Yeah, but they are still pretty limited, aren't
they? So you can have one Terminator can normally move four squares, can actually literally go 10 squares ahead, suddenly get a burst of speed and move 2.5 times his normal speed.
Yeah, exactly. There's simulationist for you.
Yeah, exactly.
We only played it once, obviously, but I think I preferred it to Space Hulk, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we'll definitely have to crack that out at some point. That again.
Yeah, I want to play some more Project Pandora as well. But it's weird because I've only played the introductory scenario and I quite liked it and thought, yeah, it's quite good mechanics, but I've never really felt gripped to go back and play it again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really bothered about playing it again. But it's like you say, I think that's the big difference from what I'm hearing from Dwarf King's Hold and Advanced Hero Quest, is like Dwarf King's Hold is kind of squad-based, warband-based, isn't it? You're controlling a bunch of guys, whereas Advanced Hero Quest, you've got your character, your hero represents you more.
Yeah.
And then you might hire henchmen as well. But
you have your avatar. That's me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is probably why I like Hero Quest more than Space Crusade. It was always, go right back to that, it's you had your one guy in Hero Quest, but in Space Crusade, it was just a squad sort of tactics
game. Although the sergeant was supposed to represent you, because the sergeant was a lot more durable than the Marines. So, but I know what you mean, he still had a bunch of guys with bolters and rocket launchers and things, rather than just you on your own with your trusty halberd.
Right, at this stage, guys, we're at 10 o'clock. How are we all doing for time?
Yeah, all right, just now.
Okay. So should we go on to Matt's the modifications that we played and how the game's been altered?
Sure. Can I just ask a quick question? That you were talking about Project Pandora, Joe. I just looked up the pictures of that. It looks pretty... looks weird. Is it space-based?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the Mantic sci-fi setting. So it's got space rats and your corporation marines.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of a rat in weird metal bionic armour.
We put those together, didn't we, Joe?
Yeah.
Cool, at least I'd like to go that sometime too. It's like... but anyway, sorry, go on, Grant, next subject.
Okay, so next, we played Advanced Hero Quest, but we did change quite a lot, mainly from Matt. Was it kind of a collaboration between yourself, Matt, and yourself, Joe?
Yeah, pretty much. It's something we've been talking about for ages.
Did I just say yourself, Matt, and yourself?
Yes,
Ross. Both of you and Matt. Right, yourself, Matt, and Ross.
I think it's probably me and Matt are more involved in the design and the tweaking side of it, because we're veterans of, like, Advanced Hero Quest is what got us both into game and stuff, and we've played it. Whereas I don't think Russ had played it really before picking it up again recently with us. Although he had played Warhammer Fantasy roleplay, which Matt has borrowed some elements from and brought it into Advanced Hero Quest.
As well as some D&D 3rd edition as well, I think.
Yeah, there's bits and pieces from all over that we've been grabbing and adding in. A bit from Project Pandora, in fact, as the skill for my elf archer character. Because
Should we start with the character creation then?
Sure.
Okay.
Character creation, you're either playing it straight down the line as it is in the book, which is everything's completely random, even your race, You just you roll randomly to determine which race you're going to be, and then you roll randomly for all your stats.
I didn't realise that random race choice was actually the rules. I thought that was just the like Matt's general approach to games.
No, that's in the rules. By the letter of the rules, that's what it is. But it's a lot more flexible in terms of like, if there's a model that you really want to play, like oh, I want to pick this model to be my guy, then it'll kind of like let you choose your race or change some of your stats around and things. And I had suggested to him that for all the stats that come off the same dice roll, if that makes sense, because sometimes you roll d8 plus 3, sometimes it's d6, sometimes it's d4. So I was saying, like, we'll roll all the d6s together and then assign them to stats to give you a bit more control over the kind of character you want. It's disheartening if you, like, go, oh, yeah, I want to play a fighter, and then you roll a 1 for your weapon skill. So that was a modification made. That's why you became the magical archer dude.
Magical archer,
magical witch hunter archer.
I was quite happy with him in the end, actually. It was good fun.
Yeah, he performed pretty well, didn't he? Barrel man.
So do we then have, so into this we have inserted a sort of a feat system or skills, what are we calling them? I call them feats off of D&D 3, really.
Yeah, they operate like feats. We're kind of referring to them as skills, but yeah, they're not really. So, since you already have weapon skill and bow skill as stats, we probably shouldn't call them skills.
Yeah.
So it's each character gets an additional feat or talent to make them a bit more different, because as it is, sometimes about Syracuse can get a bit generic, like all the characters feel a bit same.
Yeah. Yeah, you and the monster are standing there throwing dice at each other and waiting to see what happens to your hit points.
Exactly, which is pretty dull. So Matt just said, like, everyone can pick an extra skill just to give yourself a bit more flavour. So for... I think I'm on... Because we've actually been playing this campaign on and off for a while, although it's only... just kind of getting momentum, and it's recently that Matt's actually drawn up the map of the world and we've decided that we're playing in. So I've been through about three or four characters already, which is why my current character is really good, because he rolled some really good stats, good enough for him to actually survive.
Yeah, as I said at the time, Darwinism is in effect there.
Yeah, other than...
Whatism, Grant?
Darwinism. Natural selection.
Yeah. Aye. How many characters you had before that, Joe?
I've had two who've died, and then the elf archer who's still alive. So So I've got So yes, big Henri. He did have an identical twin brother previously.
Did he die?
Yeah, he died down a Skaven Warren.
As you do.
as you do. And I was playing a troll slayer guy as well, who managed to complete his troll slaying quest and get killed by a vampire. So.
Nice. Well, at least, as long as he completed it, it's fine.
Death is a
small price.
Yeah, well, that's what troll slayers want, don't they? They want death in combat in glorious fashion.
Yeah, so, that's true.
Yeah,
fighting. But the game is about picking up lots of gold and getting better stuff.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's what you really wanted.
Indeed.
Yeah. What was your feat, Grant? I can't remember now.
I basically ripped off the one that Russ already had, because I kind of had him down as a mercenary, and so I took a feat to be able to get mercenaries much more easily, so henchmen. Because that's one of the mechanics
to persuade them.
Yeah, one of the mechanics of Hero Quest is, from Advanced Hero Quest, is you buy followers to follow you around. So you actually have a small mini party of your own, and you pay their upkeep as long as they survive. If he died, don't pay them, I think.
You have to pay.
If we play, next game, I'm definitely getting some henchmen. I was feeling a bit left out with all the just getting one shot every turn, and you guys were all getting like four.
Oh yeah, you didn't have any henchmen, did you? You spent all your money on the grave route and stuff.
Exactly, which was useless.
It would have been good if we'd remembered to use it. We just kept forgetting between.
Yeah, that's true.
So what was yours, Cole? It was like it was a kind of
It was basically a smite undead type of thing, but it
Oh, you
was
just a
around the
barrel
story.
of
The
holy
storyline
water.
was, yeah, exactly. The storyline was that I had a barrel of holy water on my back, and I built I dipped every arrow into it before I fired it off. So yeah, it would do. What was it? It would get an extra dice against undead. Any.
It
Yeah,
did a
was it Dark
free
Undead? Was
wound,
it
didn't it?
evil? Yeah, was
Undead,
that it? Yeah, it was a second roll.
and
You got an
demon.
extra dice.
Yeah, your
Yes.
damage, and you did an automatic point of damage as well, I think, against undead and demons, which is
That was it.
pretty, it's pretty good. And you got past. I mean, we didn't meet any invulnerable monsters, which was a shame. But you would have got past their invulnerability, which is a monster talent that they can have, which is really annoying if you meet an invulnerable monster because you have to roll 12 to wound them.
That's cool. Oh, and I didn't have to roll on the fear table either, or whatever it was.
Oh,
I said I didn't
yeah.
have to roll for terrifiedness.
Yeah, that's good. That can
It's
mess
quite
you up.
fun.
So yeah, I liked him. I'm looking forward to playing him again. What was his name? I can't even remember his name now.
It was
Look up the
called
character sheet.
Saul,
Oh,
wasn't it, I think?
Saul. Yeah,
Saul.
that was it. Solaris something. I can't remember because you hear how
Insane.
attached I am to my character.
Yeah.
Only one game with him so far.
Okay. So is that with are items worth going over, or is that by buying items with their gold? I think that's pretty much standardized.
It's pretty much standard, yeah. You can just
Yeah.
buy better weapons between missions if you've got enough gold. But
Good
that's the
tips.
thing, that the gold mechanics, the economy, it's quite tight in Advanced Hero Quest. You have to be quite lucky to end up with riches, unlike a lot of other kind of dungeon bash systems or
Yeah, where the gold ends up
D&D.
meaningless.
Yeah, it ends up meaningless because you
Yeah.
can buy everything except the magic items, which you can't buy anyway. So you're just,
Yeah.
yeah. You
Aye.
just.
Well, it was the training I was saving up for because there's a few of
Yeah.
my stats I rolled pretty rubbish on, so I was waiting to be able to spend. What was it, 400 gold or something it takes to raise a stat, or was it
200.
200? 200, yeah.
200,
So
yeah.
yeah, that's my
Okay.
first stop next time.
That's it, because there's no XP system in Advanced Hero Quest. It is just gold. And yeah, you don't level up. You spend gold to train and improve that way. Although I think Matt said that he's going to modify that and going to have some sort of experience-based system as well, in terms of
So we
overcoming
can try
monsters.
and convince him to give us more XP. He must be missing the abuse that we throw his way when he doesn't give us enough XP. I would never have expected him to add that into a game.
I hadn't thought of that actually, because it's just that one resource that you can build up. It's quite good that actually. I don't know if I'd don't really go for XP when it's kind of just a bit streamlined, isn't it? It all comes off of that one thing. It's what you're going for is gold anyway.
And it works for everything. Yeah, I quite
Yeah.
like it.
You can pay to train or you can pay to get a better suit of armor, but it's up to you. And I suppose there's the fate points as well, which is kind of like experience. If you do really well in a mission, then your fate points increase.
And
Consult
they
you
were
down.
used a lot.
Yeah, you need your fate points. Yeah, you need fate.
I'm pretty sure. I'm sure it wasn't deliberate, but I'm pretty sure that a couple of the henchmen used like 9 fate points in that game. I'm sure there was at least one lady henchman that used about 4 at least. I'm sure she was only supposed to have 2.
She only used one.
Okay.
She only used one. No, you're getting back when you're getting back when you return to town and rest. So we refreshed them all after the zombie assault on the village. We rested up after that, so everyone got their fate back.
Oh, so we got some after that triple assault from the necromancers.
Yeah,
That
after the
counted as a
necromancers,
rest.
that counted as a rest. Yeah, so we got all our fate back.
Okay. Oh, well, that makes
Okay,
sense. That's why
bonus.
she got so many fate points then.
So she got hers back, because I think she'd used it during that attack, but then she didn't use it again until the final battle.
Assuming
Okay,
that was
cool.
that candy.
Candy. Nah.
Should we keep? Okay, we'll keep me the stuff maybe for when we talk about the scenarios. Should we talk about how we get into the scenarios then? We've got our characters now, and we've decided what cool stuff they have. Advanced Hero Quest, I think the standard is you have the current dungeon that you're going to have to get through somehow, isn't it? And then.
Yeah, and it's normally a three level dungeon. The basic rules would say that it's randomly generated for the first two levels, and then usually, well, at least in the quests that come with the game, then the third level is already pre-done, pre-generated, and has encounters and where the monsters are found, and traps and things that are already sorted out. But the nice thing is that you can just randomly generate as much as you want, as you explore as you go. And sometimes it leads to weird dungeons where you kind of skip through a level entirely because you find the stairs down really quickly.
You get out.
Yeah. Sometimes you find like a back way out. And sometimes you end up looking for ages and ages and going through loads of like little rooms and having lots of little skirmishes with the monsters.
And you run out of board pieces, so you have to map them out and
recycle them. Yeah.
What do you mean by the last one's pre-generated, Joe? So would there be like maps for final levels preset?
Yeah, and White Dwarf used to do a lot of them. Back when Advanced Hero Quest was popular, and they would be like, the first two levels are randomly generated, and the GM has these listed character monsters available, and then the third level, there'll be like the cultist chamber, and everything's all drawn out, so you just lays it out as you go.
Cool. That makes sense, because then, like you say, if you skip out a couple of levels just completely by sheer luck, at least there's one level which will be a bit of a battle to get through.
Yeah, you'd always have the final climactic level, and you always have to find a quest room to get the stairs down. I think that's an option for all the levels, but especially for the final level, you have to end it by coming to the quest room, which has always got the most monsters. Mm-hmm. And any character monsters that are kicking about.
Mm-hmm. So, how did Matt give us our introduction to this, to our adventures here? Then, do you remember that call?
Through dozens and dozens of zombies' ass. That's what he did.
Well, not straight away. We actually had a role playing scene.
Story, yeah.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay, sorry, I forget about the story. Zombies, that's what I like.
I believe, well, certainly we were, I think we arrived in a throne room, and then we had to do a wee bit of role-playing and role-play out that, taking up the mission. And then, instead of just spending gold on our mercenaries, we actually had to go and persuade them.
And
as well as a dice roll, which supported that.
But were you not a bit miffed at that, because you'd taken a skill in hiring mercenaries and then Matt made you convince them anyway?
I was slightly miffed at that, yeah.
And then roll a dice on it.
I think I did roll a dice there. I think I might have got...
You did roll a dice and you rolled... I think you rolled about average, didn't you?
Yeah.
But you did end up getting four mercenaries really cheap. Four basically for the price of one.
That's where the fee comes in. Yeah, it gave me a bonus on that roll, which is fine. We did a lot of that. They were looking at how to get across country, we could take the short but dangerous route.
Modifications that Matt's come up with, like the basic game. There isn't any travelling above ground. You just go in a dungeon and fight monsters, and then you go back to town and you're safe in town. He's come up with all the modifications of, how far apart all the places are, and you've got to travel between them, and you might have wilderness encounters and things like that.
Okay. So I think so what happened was as we were spending more time preparing for this, time was clearly becoming a resource, because he was making notes about exactly how the encounter we're coming across was building up. And there were obviously more creatures gathering, and the town that we had to defend was actually slowly being defeated. Until we arrived at the town.
Was he picking up counters by that point, or was that just him saying, "Oh, well, that's one house destroyed, that's another house destroyed"?
I think it's the equivalent of that. Was he rolling dice?
I think he probably was. He probably was, and he's probably using the 1 or 12 system that works so well for Advanced Hero Quest that every exploration turn when you're down a dungeon, or probably like every day of travel or something, you roll the dice, and on a 1 or 12 he gets an extra counter, which means something bad's going to happen in the next in the next fight, in the next encounter, or whenever he chooses to play it.
Is every single one of those counters an advantage to him?
Yeah.
Like extra monsters, extra...
Is it trap, wandering monster,
Fate.
Oh yeah, it gives a fate point to a monster. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, okay.
Escape. Yeah. So you can have a monster escape the battle and character.
Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah, I remember he did that with his little kobold. Skink crossbow, wasn't it? Skink crossbow.
Yeah, chameleon skink with a poison blowpipe. Yeah. Escape.
Oh, was that what it was? Yeah.
Yeah. Little bastard.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, we stumbled across the... Oh, no, well, we went to my monastery first, didn't we? Because my guy was
after we recruited the mercenaries with the help of Grant's character, Captain Smash, mm-hmm. what was it called?
Yep.
Wave Smash,
yeah. Yeah. Maybe we'll change that for next time, but we don't.
We decided to go across country, didn't we? To save a bit of time.
And then we came up with our first encounter, which took the whole thing out of the dungeon. And instead of using squares, we were using tape measures. Which was quite refreshing, really. I'd always thought you could do that when I was a kid, and never got around to actually doing it or finding people to play with. And it's just, I really liked that. We had a horseman running at us who seemed to have an extra skill of charging right through us all.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the only problem with when you modify the game and stuff. The monsters get really nasty extra skills as well.
Yeah.
Like the previous dungeon we'd done when we were taking on, when me and Russ were taking on the troll king or the troll chieftain who was leading all these orcs. We were doing really well. We're all bunkered up by the door, ready to fight him. And then Matt goes, right, he's got this charge skill where he lowers his head and he charges at you. And he makes an attack against all of you as he goes past. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, it's quite
But
nice.
it does liven it up a bit.
Yeah,
You can get stuck a bit fighting in doorways, so it's nice to add in a few extra things that
changes
that dynamic a bit.
So yeah, we had a minor sort of skirmish which we relatively easy got past. I decided to shoot at them from the cover of the woods. Well, I ran my guy into the woods and hid basically all the rest of it sorted out.
Yeah, so and that was the equivalent of like a wandering monster encounter, just a random encounter. But the first kind of major battle that was like the equivalent of a proper dungeon level was at Colin's priest's town, or the town next to his monastery.
Yeah, I right next to it, yeah.
Yeah, scenario two, where we had basically the centre of a 6x4 wargame table, the middle centre section of that taken up with cottages and houses to represent this village and the inhabitants within. We had some halflings and maybe a hunter and some elves all living in this village, and they were all looking out for their own village. We had to set out our own party to try and defend the village from this onset of zombies attacking. And here we had zombies actually as units.
Zombies.
As well. Yeah, they kept on coming. I didn't realise that we had necromancers out of our line of sight.
No, none of us realised that.
No,
none of us realised until the NPC gave us a really big clue.
Yeah.
And they were, because I just had it in my head that it was like a zombie survival scenario. We've got to get through the night.
Yeah, totally.
Fight off the zombies, get to the morning, and then we'll be safe. But. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
this is what I want to talk about this later when we talk about what the role of the GM is, or I think that may sort of wait for a later episode given we're an hour and 20 minutes in. Once we realised it was quite an epic battle, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a tough fight.
Because we had to, it was at the opposite ends of three sides of this table were necromancers that we had to fight, and the superior tacticians that were, we split off in three directions, I think.
Yeah. Do you think, I was wondering, do you think we'd have had trouble with that scenario if they'd all come at once? No, we managed to block off some of them, some of the sides.
Yeah, I think we would have had trouble if they'd all...
Oh, yeah, we used magic, didn't we, to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which stopped a lot of the zombies coming through for a while, didn't it?
Exactly. It blocked off two sides at first, I think, and then one of those sides was overcome after maybe about 3 or 4 turns. Mm-hmm. And then, the other one after that. But it was already kind of, there was plenty of zombies already, never mind whether they'd all come at once.
Well, I did like how, and in the big departure from Advanced Hero Quest rules, we had groups of zombies, as well as individual zombie models coming. We had these groups of zombies which moved around in units of 6, ranked up like, ranked up 3 or 4 wide, maybe 8 of them, ranked up like Warhammer units. Who would like grab you and drag you in a sort of grapple maneuver, and they'd do massive damage unless someone could break you free.
Or shoot.
Exactly.
You're dead. It's what you would have wanted.
When I fumbled one of my shots on one of these said zombie mobs as they were attacking another character's henchman. And killed the henchman instead by mistake, which is another modification that Matt's made in that the henchmen have a chance to grumble or complain, morale, so either there's a chance they might leave the party or demand extra money to stay if you treat them badly, don't heal them up when they get injured or anything,
or get their pals killed.
Yeah, get their pals killed, or promise them free healing and then. Leave them all dead in a big pile.
And there was not one that was swearing revenge on a character. I can't remember who it was. Was that you then, Joe, when you killed? No, was it you that killed, or one of your henchmen that killed the cog, the knight of whatever he's called?
No, that was my elf character.
Was it your elf guy, right? Yeah,
Phelan. Yeah. He missed with a shot and, killed the Knight of the Cogs.
Yeah, and then the other henchman hated your elf from then on because of that.
But then he left. He refused to stay with the party, that henchman, and disappeared off. He's probably gone to join Roger and his band of brigands.
Yeah.
Roger the Robber.
Yeah. Oh,
you'll bring him to us and kill him. Rob us again.
Yeah.
So we, that was that scenario. A lot of elements there. What the units of zombies, the out of sight necromancers producing the zombies. The fact we had to defend this town as well as
check the NPCs. Check their houses. The NPC wizard in the middle of the board who was like leading the town's defense, and we had to protect him, and he would help us with his spells if we were close enough. So, there's a lot going on. It was a good battle, and it took a while to play out.
Uh-huh. And then the third and the nicest bit of the scenario design was the stealth mission. We had to get through the Valley of the Vargo.
that was pretty cool.
Yeah, so what was it? We had these almost like blip counters from Space Hulk. We had bits of cardboard face down, and certain ones of them were, when flipped over, revealed that it was actually sort of scattered around the board, and we had to get from our party from one end of the board to the other, trying to avoid these monsters.
Yeah, and there was six counters, isn't there? And there was one which was the big monster, one which was a small monster. Or a group of monsters, was it?
Yeah.
And then and then the other four were just noises in the forest, just distractions.
Yeah. So we're still trying to hide from noise in the forest because we didn't know which was which. Yeah. Lots of atmosphere in this one. It's something that's just brilliant about Space Hulk and a welcome addition here. But we had the additional problem that we're trying to sneak through. So you can move your speed.
Because there's no agility stat or there's no kind of rogue class or anything like that. So we're just using the speed stat, which is the closest thing to determine how sneaky, quiet you were.
Yeah, but you got bonuses to that when you
move slower.
When you move less in your speed, and penalties when you moved faster. And those are bonuses to the stealth roll that you had to make. And was it then? Yes, then the blips, each of them rolled to hear a certain distance. If they heard you, they go straight towards you, otherwise they scatter in a random direction and neutral off that way. And it winds up with
I was just going to say the mechanic was that they rolled a distance. You measured that distance. If there was any of us within that distance that hadn't rolled their stealth roll, i.e. we'd made a noise, then the Vargoth heard us, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that blip heard you move towards you.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Whatever that was.
Yes. the possible Vargoth.
The possible Vargoth, yeah. To begin with, we most of the party were really noisy, so we're just kind of clomping through this forest making loads of noise. And revealed one of the blips, and it was just the sound of the forest. That was fine. Yeah. And then my henchwoman, who's been mentioned already, Candy, she clomped up, made a load of noise, and she just decided to just charge, just reveal this blip, just stormed into it, and it happened to be the ghouls. And it was only one ghoul, and she just like took it out with one hit.
Yeah.
With quite a lucky thought blow. Yeah. So that was quite good. And then a couple of characters managed to sneak around and get to the tomb, and we're trying to find the hidden entrance. It looked like we'd get through, but then one of the blips just randomly, weren't making noise, but just randomly wandered straight onto my elf henchman, who was...
Luckily he was far away from the rest of us.
He was luckily far away from the rest of us, and was, had just joined us from the village, because we'd helped defend his house. He'd come to join us.
Foolish elf.
Of course it was the Vargulf. Huge beast that appears, and then he did quite well against it. He lasted a couple of rounds and did some damage to it before it tore him limb from limb. And then we managed to shoot it to death before it got too close, didn't we?
I think
for that one probably was a little too safe, but it was the first time we'd done anything. First time we played that out. I don't know, what do you guys think? Do you think it was a bit easy as it turned out in the end?
Yeah, it wasn't half as difficult as we were afraid of at the start. Like, we were kind of sneaking about really carefully at the start, weren't we? Trying not to uncover anything. But then, we killed the Vargoth pretty quick. So, it wasn't too much trouble.
We were quite lucky killing the Vargoth, though, I think. I mean,
do you think?
Yeah, I think we were, because it had loads of nasty abilities. And stuff.
But it was good. We shot it before it got close to us.
Yeah, we shot it and managed to get a few crits on it, luckily, before it got close.
Yeah.
But it had like regeneration and everything, so it would be getting its hits back every round and multiple attacks. And it did like 8 dice of damage if it hit you.
Well, fair enough.
Good job we shot it. But I mean, it wasn't anywhere near as dangerous as the massive zombie attack.
But
it was a good. A good scenario choice and interesting.
Yeah, it was good fun. Just something a bit different, wasn't it? It was like, rather than just stumbling through a dungeon uncovering monsters, it's a bit of strategy to it.
Yeah. So the next scenario, I forgot about this one actually. It was a traditional advanced hero quest, but we'd already found a sort of mission. We've already found the map for that, so we actually sort of breezed our way through it. We took a small detour to find some treasure.
That was before the Vale of the Vargulf.
Oh, was it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought it was.
The Vale of Vargulf was the second, wasn't it? Yeah.
The third. Yeah. Or, sorry, hang on. First was the encounter with
zombie attack.
Zombie attack. Then it was the small dungeon. And then the Vargulf Valley sneaking across. And, then we're on to the final dungeon.
Yeah.
After the entrance to the dungeon, wasn't it? We had to fight a few ghouls at the kind of the gate.
Yeah,
to try and get through.
Yeah, that was the very start. After we
was that the very start? Yeah.
After we rested in the village, after seeing off the zombies, then we had to fight a few ghouls at the entrance to the tomb.
Yeah.
But not at the entrance to the crypt, and then went through the crypt. But we had the map. We'd luckily found the map, so we knew how to get to the Vale of the Vargulf.
Yeah.
And then we got through there, and then it was the final mission at the Tomb of Roland, where we had to uncover the evil that was threatening the village and reanimating the former elders and turning them into evil necromancers.
Yeah, and that level was just nasty.
Yeah, that was hard. That was nasty. We learned some valuable lessons.
Yes, we did.
Crowding around the door isn't always a good thing when you've got traps which are Area effects. Yeah.
Yes, especially when it's turn you crazy and attack your friends effect.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Matt rolled that trap up and said, "Oh man, that's really tough." And he didn't hold back at all, did he?
No.
Oh man, that's really hard. Right. Yeah. You turn and smack him in the face. However, he made my character go off into one of the rooms and deliberately set off traps, which made more whites appear.
Yeah. So how many did we lose control of? Was it three characters? It was me, you, Grant, and somebody else.
Henri was it? Henri went mental as well.
Oh yeah, because he got held in the end, didn't he? He got captured by the end.
Yeah. The three remaining characters had to...
And one of the henchmen went mad as well, one of the sergeants.
Oh Sarge, yeah, of course.
Sarge, the legendary sergeant who... just kept on going.
Yeah.
Who got knocked off his horse by dire wolves, fought 10 zombies on his own, ghouls. He went mad briefly, yeah.
The only way he got through that was by Russ's character taking control of those whites, the skeletons that appeared and basically making them stand in the way.
Yeah.
So we had this weird reversal where we were controlling the GM's characters, the GM was controlling our characters.
Yeah.
We were just waiting for it all to wear off.
Yeah. But even discounting that bit, there's basically the process was we had to go through six rooms and open up a bunch of crypts to find keys, essentially. It was jewels, wasn't it, for the door, which you had to get all three to open up the door at the very end.
Yeah, so each... half of the rooms were actually useful. It wound up we had to open up all six rooms.
Yeah, exactly. But every single crypt had some kind of horrible trap in it that did nasty things.
Yeah.
whether it was set off monsters or actually just trying to shoot you in the face.
Yeah.
Something horrible.
Or guillotine your hands off.
Oh, yeah.
I had to spend fate point to not have my hand cut off.
But yeah, no, it was quite good fun though. It was just, that was a bit different as well. Not just fighting monsters, but exploring our way through.
And it was the Temple of Sotek, wasn't it? We should probably say. So it had like a Lizardman theme, and Matt was using... It's quite handy that we all play Warhammer, so we've got access to all these different races. So we're using lots of Lizardman guys, Saurus and Skinks were coming out of the pools and attacking us.
Oh yeah, just surrounding us, again. Yeah.
That was a lot of baddies when they came out of the pools, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a lot.
Pretty horrendous, yeah. And the final mission room was the priest of Sotek.
Yeah.
And his really hard lizard main guys.
Yeah.
Temple guard.
That was it. Yeah. And the little skink poison blow dart guy who managed to flee away earlier on.
And an illusionist, was it? Some kind of... I can't remember the other guy, the magic guy.
Spellcaster as well, yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember what he did now exactly, but...
I think he fireballed us at one point.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. Someone definitely... Uh-huh. Yeah, he did, yeah.
Well, that's how my character died.
Yeah, he got killed by a fireball.
Luckily, we found one of our randomly generated treasures at the end was something to bring you back to life.
Very luckily.
Soul gem, which we very kindly used.
Yes. We actually debated not using it, didn't we? Because we thought that...
role-playing it, my character didn't want to because using it could have sucked his soul into the warp. He's quite happy with the stone, thank you very much.
But Wade Smash came back.
Yeah, I think it might be a little more disturbed and a little less happy-go-lucky than previously. He comes back.
He stared into the abyss. He knows what's waiting for him.
Yeah. But I know it was a really good end to the campaign. I think it's just good fun. I think the necromancer almost went down a bit too easy, but I suppose he was always going to be kind of weak, wasn't he? It was more of the his temple guard defenders that were the real sort of muscle, weren't they?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's just reflected in most of our spellcaster characters as well.
Yeah.
That if they get hit, they're weak. Mm-hmm. So if they get shot up, they're in trouble.
Yeah,
we did quite well because I think we managed to kill Temple Guard and clear, so a couple of our archers had line of sight to him and we just shot him.
Aye, we took him out before he could do anything too nasty, didn't we?
That spell,
he got a few nasty spells off first, but
What did he manage to cast? I can't remember now.
I'm sure he cast one of those withering spells where a character loses strength every round. And so I think he just spent a fate point to negate it.
Yeah.
Whoever he cast that on.
Was that Matt's annoying little counter that he could use even?
Those monsters just come with spells.
Just because he's a big final monster.
Yeah, certain spellcaster monsters just have their spells, their components they can cast, like two or three spells or whatever, so whenever you meet them they're going to cast that. There's a really horrible one that some of the Skaven and some of the Chaos guys get. It's called Choke, where they cast Choke on you, and then by the rules as written, all your character can do is like move one square for three rounds and then you die. unless the caster's been killed in the meantime.
Right. So basically you're relying on your henchmen or your friends. That's it.
Yeah. And you're hoping you've got a fate point left because you're probably going to need it.
Yeah. Yeah, suddenly, the spell stops working just by chance. But yeah, that was a really good finish.
Yeah. So we're at an hour and 40 minutes now. Or roughly, I think we started at 10 past 9. So I think I'd like to have that. I think maybe we should stop there for now, yeah?
Wrap it up for this installment of Dicing with Design. And next session, any plans? Are you going to talk about live games design then, or begin our epic quest to design the ultimate role-playing / board game, card game
/ whatever. Well, that's part of what we've got to decide, I guess, isn't it?
I think the whole one of the things I got from that weekend of gaming was what was thinking of is what is this role of the GM? What's the GM do? Because Matt at some point took on all sorts of different roles. Yeah. He was sort of sometimes playing against us, sometimes playing sort of for us, which is a weird sort of.
That's a good topic. Yeah, maybe we should do that. We should focus that, the role of the GM and GM versus GM-less systems. Pet project of mine.
Yep. Speaking of which, article.
I've got an article which Andrew Girdwood has kindly put up on Geek Native. The article's called Dicing with Design, in fact.
Good. good promotion. Do you get a wee plug-in for the podcast there?
That's what I thought. I don't think I have. I'm not sure if he's linked it up or not. That's an idea for you. Go on there and leave a comment that links to the podcast, and then it'll look like more people like it.
It's like, there's a podcast called that. It's interesting.
That's my take on how to design a GM-less game, or the things you need to consider a GM-less role-playing game.
Is that kind of a continuation of the last one you had on Geek Native then? Because your last one was GM versus GM-less, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was like, is it the end of GMs as we know it?
Yeah.
The future of games design. So this one's, what I think makes a GM-less game and what things you need to do. And there's some discussion of the GM role, what holes you need to plug if you take that safety net away. Because basically, I think that's what a GM is in a lot of cases. Is in a lot of our RPGs, the GM is the safety net. Fix the system for all the bits that the designer couldn't be bothered to do properly.
Plug the gaps. Make it more fun, basically.
Yeah. Cheat.
Turn something that isn't actually fun into something that's fun.
No, that sounds good. I reckon we could get a good topic out of that.
Cool.
Plus our first decisions on the live game. Yeah, that would make a good episode.
Yeah, the game design, I think we'll have to speak about where we start with that, whether it's a genre or a theme. And you actually touched on that as well, Joe, in your article of what's the first step. Does it come from a theme, or does it... You very firmly came down on the theme side of thing rather than a setting, a sort of a... literature genre.
Yeah, I think the theme's important. What the game's about is the starting point, and then the backdrop to that can be any things. But at the same time, if you've got a strong idea that you want to make a game about a certain setting, that can be the theme then, the theme of exploring that setting in a very simulationist way.
Yeah, or maybe we should, maybe we should look at environments first. If we're talking about making it a game that we could play online, and maybe do live recordings of.
Mm.
So should we maybe the first for the first bit of the games design, first game design episode should be about the sort of things that are out there, and I could do a bit of research into what kind of options there are out there.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Sure.
I'd find that interesting.
Or is that due to do with the design? I suppose it affects the design of the game. It has to.
Yeah.
This is a constraint under which we would have to design the game as to what sort of facilities we have available to us.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Go for it. If you fancy doing that.
Yep, okay, I'll do some research on that and we'll talk about GMs versus GM list next time.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that's done then. Thanks everyone for listening to Dice and the Design Podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, please do. Let us know somebody's listening, and tell us what you like about it, what you don't, or as we said before, tell us to stop if you want. That's fine. We'll take that on board. And absolutely. So you can get Colin on @GamerColin. You can get Joe on @JoeJPrince. And you get me on @GrantSensei. Anything more to add, guys?
No, that's all.
That's
thanks
all.
Very much for the chat.
See you next time. Okay. Happy gaming, everyone.
Enjoy your games, guys.
Have fun.
Bye.